Hello, and welcome to the Wild Heart Meditation Center podcast. We release these episodes every week on Wednesday mornings, and the best way to support us is by clicking subscribe and taking a moment to rate the podcast wherever you are listening. If you'd like to support our efforts to keep the nonprofit Meditation Center open in Nashville, you can donate via Venmo by sending your donation to @WildHeartNashville, or you can make a donation through our website, wildheartmeditationcenter.org, by clicking the Donate tab. And one final announcement, we are very excited to offer the Wild Heart Labor Day Weekend Loving Kindness Retreat at Heartwood Refuge in Hendersonville, North Carolina, on September 3rd through the 6th. If you'd like more information about this retreat, please visit wildheartmeditationcenter.org and click the Events tab, or you can sign up and learn more at heartwoodrefuge.org. Peace and love. Hope you enjoy. What's the rock star of the Eightfold Path? Fucking mindfulness. It's on TV, it's in magazines, it's signing autographs outside after the show. You know, I got a meet and greet next Tuesday with it. Mindfulness. It's got friends in high places. But I want to spend time teasing out what really is the root of this mindfulness. And looking at it, like, directly, what mindfulness is in the mainstream has its roots in Buddhism. You know, it's like, I want to go back to the original. I want to know who the original is. Like, my favorite band's the Ramones. They're the original punk rockers, right? So I want to know the original mindfulness. And I'm going to take the next couple weeks to go back to the original mindfulness. So the seventh factor, samasati is the Pali Sanskrit word for right mindfulness or wise mindfulness or appropriate mindfulness, or I say harmonious mindfulness. So one day I got asked to be on this like local access TV show in town, and somebody canceled. So they're like, somebody called me out of the blue and was like, hey, can you be on this TV show tonight? And I was like, sure. It was a TV like show on addiction, and they wanted to talk about mindfulness and addiction. I was like, yeah, totally. That's like my whole life. And the first question they asked me is, what is mindfulness? What is mindfulness? So I started talking about mindfulness. I started giving instructions on mindfulness. I started going through like the how-tos of mindfulness. And they didn't like that. They were like, no, like, what is mindfulness? And with all respect to them, I understand they have a TV show and need to have, like, oh, that's what it is. I know what it is now. I have some concept of understanding what mindfulness is. Now I know this. I'm so smart. I know what mindfulness is because I saw the guy on the TV show. But I think that's, like, almost an insult to what mindfulness is. That we want to pick up a magazine and read, oh, that's what mindfulness is. Now I should do that. That's what mindfulness is. That's the definition. That's the elevator pitch for mindfulness. There's this phrase, Mick mindfulness. Somebody even wrote a book about Mick mindfulness. That we want to package up mindfulness into a product and sell it to people. It's the capitalist ploy of this spiritual materialism. That we have these 15-second commercials of blemish-free models floating on fucking clouds without a problem in the world as they sit in a perfect meditation pose. And then we see that on TV, and then we sit down on one of these cushions, and it's like, this hurts. This is hard. Why am I crying? Right? And I think that's the beauty of the realness of mindfulness. Like, let's get down and dirty with this mindfulness. That mindfulness, like, trying to define it in such terms, while I understand it is necessary, I don't want to diss on people that come up with definitions for it, but at the same time, isn't it kind of like describing like a definition for what it is to like fall in love. It's these things you need to see for yourself to really understand. So while we look at, you know, instructions around mindfulness, what it is, what it isn't, where some confusions around mindfulness. Most often, most of us come to mindfulness as an understanding of present time awareness, right? Present time awareness. That we focus on the breath. Breathing in, know that you're breathing in. Breathing out, know that you're breathing out. I've probably said that 1,000 times, if not more, in my life. That the awareness wanders off into stories, judgments, fantasies, ideas, plans, and then we go, oh, aha, my awareness has wandered off, and we come back to the breath. And this is a very simple mindfulness that is necessary, yes. And that the idea of being able to place our awareness is quite beautiful, it's quite wonderful. Because if we're looking at this as liberation, liberation from suffering, that being able to place our awareness somewhere is quite a beautiful task. And while I'm at it, I had a quote about like this liberation that I'm talking about. Like, while this mindfulness, going into like, oh, this is the end of suffering, I really want to look at like what the Buddha said about this so-called liberation. This is what he said about mindfulness. This is in the Satipatthana Sutta, the original discourse on the four foundations of mindfulness. This is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for the acquiring the true method, for the realization of Nibbana, namely the four Satipatthanas, which are the four foundations of mindfulness. Which I think that's a great sales pitch, right? So going back into this, like, okay, that present time awareness can lead to some liberation. Because if we let our mind just run wild, if you're just like not paying attention to anything, if you just let it go and you're not aware you're thinking, you're not aware of where your awareness is, our natural default as humans is stress, is regret, is future tripping and past tripping. That if this machine in our head is set out to look out for threats and worry about a lot of things. So there is a lot of freedom to come back to the present, because the present isn't so worrisome about the past and regretful of the past or worrisome about the future or planning in the future. There's quite a refuge in this present time experience. But I don't know if it's enough. Because you can have somebody like a sniper. A sniper has great present time awareness. They have their eyes set on their target. They know what they're doing, and they're precise in their attention. But I don't think that's mindfulness. So I think there's a little bit more than just pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. There's a quote I heard Joseph Goldstein say. But it wasn't Joseph Goldstein. It was this guy, Fernando Pessoa. So I'm quoting a quote from a quote right now. Live in the present, you say. Live only in the present. But I don't want to live in the present. I want reality. I think that's like, go further. And like, you start seeing into what reality. What do you mean reality? So sometimes we think in mindfulness it's about eliminating thoughts. Thoughts are the bad guy, present time good guy. But I think that's impossible to really just end thinking. Because if our well-being is reliant on thoughts being gone, we're going to be suffering a whole lot. And it's really the difference is this self-identification with the thought, that we believe every thought we think, and we believe we are our thoughts. In mindfulness, we can actually sit down and go, what is a thought? How wild is that? Have you ever sat down and go, what is a thought? That's something most people don't do. Most people believe everything their mind thinks. And what freedom we get to not believe every thought we think and actually look at the thought directly, put a microscope on the thought, say, what is that? Because otherwise, we're going to be like, you know, believing, oh, I should quit my job, I should leave my wife, I should get a new car, I should leave town, I should become a monk, they seem happy, I should, you know, and then now we're like at some monastery in Thailand, and just next thing you know, how did I end up here, you know? Yeah, I guess that's one of the more wholesome things that I guess you could follow, not the worst. But I'm sure there's terrible things your mind says, and sometimes you fall for it, right? But when our mind starts saying, like, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do this, you need to do that, having mindfulness to take a step back and go, the mind is thinking, and what is a thought? And when we actually put that awareness to go, what is a thought, we start seeing that it's nothing more than just an impulse that happens in this heart-body-mind thing. This brain-body just shoots out some sort of electric pulse that is a thought. That a thought is a part of having a human body. So just like the lungs breathe air, and just like the ears hear sound, and the eyes see sight, the mind thinks thoughts. But we forget that. That's the trouble of this. Well, not so often, we don't believe we are our sounds or our hearing, but we believe we're our thoughts really a lot. And so a certain amount of mindfulness is this metacognition, not like meta-loving kindness, but meta, like the internal processes of our cognition. M-E-T-A, metacognition. Like turning the awareness in on itself. And really contemplating, what is this? What is this? That was like Stephen Batchelor was doing like Renzai Zen practice, and that was his koan for years. What is this? What is this? So doing that to the thoughts, what is this? What is this? And I don't know if that's complete either, right? Knowing a thought is a thought is beautiful. Knowing the present time experience, wonderful. More freedom, yes. But let's keep going to see where this freedom can take us. That mindfulness really has a discerning quality, too. When we start observing the thoughts, a lot of times we can just note the thoughts, know the thought. And not knowing the thought, like getting wrapped up in the content of the thought, not getting wrapped up in the dramas and the stories of the thought, but really seeing, is this thought a wholesome thought that leads to my liberation? Or is this thought a harmful thought? And then we can pick and choose which thoughts to follow. And when we look at these thoughts, the Satipatthana outlines what we call the three poisons of the mind. The poisons of hate, the poisons of greed, and the poisons of delusion. And those are quite heavy words. Greed, hatred, and delusion. And I kind of like the dramatic quality to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where the natural human condition is greed, hatred, and delusion. It is natural. When pain arises, of course our body hates it. It hurts. It's pain. Of course. And of course when we experience pleasure, we want more of it, and we're grasping and greedy. And of course we're asleep to this whole process of delusion. But these bodies are set up for survival, not happiness. So mindfulness is the hack to this liberation, to live beyond survival. So when we start seeing the thought as the thought, and knowing which thoughts lead to suffering or liberation, like really putting the investigation on, like hatred. Hatred, the Buddha described hatred, there's no fire like greed. There's no grip like hatred. There's no net like delusion. I like that. Like, no fire like greed. And that's like, rather than intellectualizing it, don't we all know that fire of greed, that experience of being in that, on fire with the grasping, with the clinging, with the reaching towards? And it's really just step into that experience of having that mindfulness of the fire inside you. And we can cool off the flames by seeing that thought as simply a thought. And then there's no grip like hatred. Because this hatred is whatever's in my experience, I need to get rid of it. So we're like gripping onto this thing, trying to get rid of it. As a pain shows up in your knee and you're just gripping at it to get rid of it. It's that feeling, that experience of that grip of hatred that we're trying to unbind. And there's no net like delusion. Well, like I said, knowing greed when it's in the mind, knowing hatred when it's in the mind, delusion, that's a tougher one to know. And I think what happens is delusion is this self-identifying. That this can sound really shamey. You have greed in your mind. You need to get rid of that, you bad meditator. That's not what this is, because the delusion is nothing personal. That if you have greed in your mind, nothing personal. The mind has greed in it. There it is. It's okay. Just know there's greed. But the delusion will have us going into believing the greed, believing the hatred. I am this greedy thought, or I have to follow every greedy, hateful thought. And then when we start believing every thought, and we're following every thought, and we're off in Thailand shaving our heads because we believed a thought and a thought and a thought, like, we go, oh, that was just a thought. I can come back to reality. That we have, like, our fantasies that lead to the next thought, to the next thought, to the next thought. There was a teacher I love, Menindraji. Anybody know Menindraji? Menindraji, like, really was kind of a play-down teacher. He was the teacher of Deepa Ma, which I think you plenty of you know. I love Deepa Ma. He was the teacher of Joseph Goldstein. And he's not as well celebrated as some of the teachers, but Menindraji would say, a thought of your mother is not your mother, it's a thought. But we get lost in that delusion to believe a thought of my mother is my mother. And then I could be like, oh my gosh, my mom did that thing when I was a kid, and I could start playing out resentments in my mind as if my mom is right here, but it's, oh, that's a thought. We can think about, like, make up a fantasy of a person we hate. Oh, that right-wing conservative Trump supporter, blah, 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 that hates these people, that people. And then it's like, whoa, that person is a thought right now. Are they here right now? No, that's a thought. So we can make up so many enemies in the world, but it's a thought. So a thought of your mother is not your mother, it's a thought. I thought that's so insightful, so real, right? So I really think that's what the key to mindfulness is. That mindfulness is this present time awareness of clear seeing, of knowing the thoughts in the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. I had vertigo somewhat recently. And I remember thinking, like, how terrible it must be for people that don't have a meditation practice to have vertigo. Like, it was terrible vertigo. Like, I could not lift my head out of bed. Like, I woke up that morning and I, like, just getting up was like the room was shaking. I just collapsed. I remember that day, you know, when you get up in the morning, you take your morning pee and all of that. I didn't go up, get up for my morning pee until 7 p.m. because I couldn't lift my head up. And so there was that end. But then also I was supposed to go kayaking with friends that day. And I like was like, I really want this to go away because I want to go kayaking. But there's like, I can't even sit up. But really, like, if I can see the hatred, the grip of hatred, as my head is spinning, and if I am like, I don't want to be in this moment. This moment's terrible. This vertigo is terrible. I need to push out this vertigo. I need to get rid of this vertigo. I'm in hell in those moments. The vertigo isn't my hell. My hatred of the vertigo is hell. And I remember acknowledging that, being like, ooh, stepping aside from hatred and actually just being with the vertigo, being with the spinning, being with the difficulty, and like interested in this body that's doing this very interesting thing, and really contemplating sickness, that sickness is a part of life. And, you know, the sickness may be the end. Maybe I have something that is going to be the end of me. Okay. Being that with an open heart. Okay. This can be here. This vertigo can be here. And then as soon as my mind goes into hating the vertigo, I see that. That leads to my suffering. Come back to the vertigo with acceptance and care. And then as the mind goes, we should be done with this. I really want to go kayaking. Like, it would be so much better right now. And then I go, oh, that's the fire of greed. Like, oh, I want to be in a different moment. It's grasping and pushing, grasping and pushing. That this mind naturally does. And we come back to the center of vertigo. The same thing happened. I got a new tattoo. Same thing happened with this tattoo. With, you know, neck tattoos, you kind of have to be upside down and have somebody digging into the side of your neck. It's not a pleasant experience. And back into this, like, oh my gosh, is he done yet? Will this be over with? Oh, you know? And then I had to pee. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I gotta go pee. And it's just the same grasping and pushing and pulling and pushing and pulling. Like, of like, oh, the pain of this tattoo just be over with already. Or, man, I need to get out of here and go pee. And when I could just come back to the feeling of having to pee and the feeling of the pain in my neck. It's a beautiful practice. And I think most of it is tolerance of pain. First thing the Buddha taught, yep, there's pain here. There's going to be pain here. Better be compassionate towards it, because otherwise you're going to be suffering. And that's, you know, a lot of my experience with meditation. Quite painful. Life is like that sometimes. So if we can just have a tolerance to come back, it's not always painful. Sometimes it's awesome. And that becomes a whole other degree to suffer over. We want more awesome. Can we just come back to appreciating pleasure, having compassion for pain? I'm just staying here. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Just staying here. And we just develop the insight to not obey every thought we think, not fall for greed, hatred, and delusion. I'm just following that path that leads to all those beautiful things that the Buddha said. And I think it'll take a long time. That's okay. Just right now, are you suffering or not? And if you're suffering, it's probably because there's some sort of resistance. Yeah. So using that measurement, am I suffering right now? And if you are, it's probably because your relationship to something right now. Observe that and do what you need to do to non-identify with that relationship and come back to this moment with care. Freedom from suffering in this moment. Cool.